Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Galaxy Geekdom Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Crystal Williams. My pronouns are she, her, and I'm here by my equally talented, funny, amazing co-host, Ashley.
Dead by dawn.
Ashley seems to have caught a little bit of a cold. Yeah, it's a weird cold. It's like those head colds that cause you to spout off lines from movies.
I don't know what... I zoned out for like 20 seconds. What happened?
Nothing. We were introducing the show. Say hi.
Hey, everybody. I'm Ashley. My pronouns are she, they. And we are about to talk about Evil Dead Rise. I believe that's what we're about to talk about anyway.
Yes. Yes, we have decided it's been long enough. And everyone should see it. If they haven't already, but we are definitely doing a spoiler discussion. And this spoiler tag consists for the show moving forward, too, because unfortunately Lizzie and Jazzy couldn't make it, but we will talk to them about their thoughts in the next episode that they appear. But for now, me and Ash are going to have a juicy conversation about the latest installment in the Evil Dead franchise, Evil Dead Rise, directed and written by Lee Cronin.
So, there is your spoiler warning.
Three, spoiler warning.
3, 2, 1, Deadites. All right, so let's get into it.
So the movie has a lot of really silly moments where a lot of fun times happen.
Surprisingly, they keep the dour tone of the last one, Evil Dead 2013, but they pepper in some, you know, goofy moments.
I feel like... Because recently, I hosted on my Discord a stream of Evil Dead 2013, and this is after seeing Rise. And going back to, for some reason, 2013 feels more cruel than Rise does to me, in tone, and a little bit more dour. I feel like Rise peppers in a bit more heart into it, but not to say that 2013 is without its emotional moments. I feel like they're very similar in tone, but you can tell the style of the different directors, for sure.
Yes, absolutely. We still have yet to see Lee Cronin's last film, The Hole in the Ground. But
no, I haven't seen that film.
Yeah, but Sam Raimi liked it so much that he decided that this guy was the guy to do Evil Dead Rise, and that proved to be a great decision because this movie is great.
Mm-hmm.
So let's break down the plot. So this movie opens with the typical POV spirit shot, or what we think is the POV spirit shot. There's actually a really clever fake out in that it's actually the POV of a drone that's being flown by this guy who wants to prank his friend, and I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah,
it was. It, like I said, it was a pretty clever fake out.
Yep, a good way to start that movie too. You get some good classic Evil Dead spirit shots, yes. You know, like, but done in a modern twist. And this opening sequence, you're gonna go on to explain if you prefer.
So it's a getaway with two cousins and one of the cousins' boyfriends. I think that's their relationship, right?
I think so. That scene goes by so fast that I didn't catch all the names and the, you know. But I think you're right.
So the cousin that got scared by the drone goes inside to read some Wuthering Heights. And then that's when the creepy shit starts, because the cousin that was sleeping wakes up and starts quoting the book when she's not even on the page that the other cousin is on, which I found pretty cool. Yeah, it's a really clever callback to the first Evil Dead movie where Cheryl is guessing the cards without seeing them.
Jack of Spades.
Like four of Hearts. Queen of Spades. Two spades, Jack of Diamonds, Jack of Clubs. Yeah, I thought that was very clever.
By the way, that opening in the original with that possession, you know, was really effective. I have to say that. It's so cool.
This scene ends with the Deadite scalping her cousin, which was a really, really grisly visual. Like, you've probably seen it in the trailer, but it's still grisly to look at.
Oh, and then dropping the scalp on the...
Yeah. And then she shreds herself up with that drone and jumps in the water.
And he gets, well...
Yeah, the boyfriend jumps in after her, and then he gets eaten and decapitated.
And his head gets thrown.
Yeah.
Poor
and
guy.
Yes, we do see the head. And then the Deadite rises up out of the water, and so does the title card.
Evil Dead Rise.
Yeah, that, which hands down is one of the best title cards I've seen in recent memory.
Also, kind of a similar opening to Evil Dead 2013, and the fact that it's like a different group of people. You know, you get to see a different group of people from your main protagonist getting, dealing with it first very quickly and very brutally, and then the title, like, hitting you across the head.
One thing I found weird about this opening is that it's not addressed until, like, the very end of the movie. Like, it has a very loose connection to the plot at hand, because it's revealed at the end that the cousin that got possessed was a tenant in the building
where I like
the
that.
Main
I thought
of the movie took place.
Yeah, I think it kept the mystery, and it, like, was a really good way to set the tone of the film.
It was a nice way to hold us over until the main carnage started.
Yeah, I think it prepares the audience. I think starting hard in one of these horror movies is always a great idea, because it prepares the audience what they're going to see, you know?
It started pretty hard in Evil Dead 2013, too.
Yeah, that's what I mean. They both start with capturing the exact tone that's needed, or that you should expect.
All right, and then we meet our main protagonist. Her name is Beth. She's played very well by Lily Sullivan.
Mm-hmm.
I can't name anything else I've seen her in, but she was really great in this, so I hope I get to see her in other roles in the future, specifically horror roles.
Yeah, this movie doesn't have a lot of people that are, like, already names, you know?
Yes, and we see her in the bathroom, and she's taking this pregnancy test, and it brilliantly sets up this recurring theme throughout the movie of motherhood.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I've been rambling this whole time. What do you think about that, Crystal?
I think... No, you're right. There's definitely a theme about parental connections and familial connections that the film is definitely relying on as, like, a major focus of its emotional core. You know, with the, even at the beginning, it's, you know, they're family members, right? So, like, going back into the main plot, it's really interesting that, like, the character that, is going to be a mom, but she has all these sort of baggages that she's not quite ready for that. And I think it's really interesting to compare her to her sister, who has the family already established, but is also going through her own personal struggles with handling that. And yeah. I think it's a really interesting perspective for an Evil Dead movie.
There's this recurring theme of motherhood, and the Deadites kind of exploit Beth's fear of becoming a mother in very gruesome ways. Specifically, the moment I mentioned on Twitter the other week, where Bridget, that was her name. She gets possessed later, and she starts eating glass. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, I gotta kill the creepy crawlies that are down inside my tummy. I don't like having things in my tummy. Do you, Auntie Beth?
And then the great insert shot of, like, the glass going down her throat was cool.
And that was like a really grisly way of exploiting that fear in Beth.
Oh, and then the whole line about two souls devouring souls. Yeah.
Hell awaits for you and your unborn bastard baby. Oh man.
The cruelty of some of those Deadites lines are pretty intense.
Yeah. I mean, I know you think that the Deadites in 2013 were cruel, but I don't know. About to kill an unborn baby is pretty cruel.
I mean, I would say they are on point with the cruelty. They are very similar.
I'm sure that there's going to be some conservative chuds that look at that and say, look, this movie is anti-abortion. yeah, that's what I fear, when that's not it at all.
I don't think this movie was intending to have any sort of messages on the concept of motherhood either way. It feels like it's a film that's not trying to specifically comment on sort of a political topic in that regard. And I'm not saying, I think all art is a form of politics, right? But I don't think this film was intentionally trying to have a specific, clear political messaging, if that makes sense. It feels...
Maybe it did, but I definitely don't think they were trying to come across, like, they're anti-abortion. I don't think that...
Right, I think that's it, too. I mean, that's not what... The Deadites don't give a shit. They're evil. That's the point.
they're just there to kill and maim and be gross.
And hurt people.
Yes.
And have fun while doing it.
Mm-hmm. We're getting a bit ahead of ourselves. Okay, so she finds out she's pregnant. She's in the town where her sister is, so she goes to visit. And it's here we meet the sister, played by... her name is Ellie. She's played by Alyssa Sutherland in probably one of my favorite Deadite performances ever. I mean, she's not a Deadite yet at this point in time, but when she becomes a Deadite, she's easily one of the series' most memorable in that regard.
Yeah, she is the main Deadite, really.
Mm-hmm. Which is kind of like the equivalent of Cheryl in the first movie.
Yes. I agree with that, yeah.
Hey, both are sisters of the protagonists.
True. That is true.
So that's another connection to the first one.
That is true. There's a lot of connections to the first one. And to the series in general.
Yeah, if you remember, Fede Alvarez said that Evil Dead 2013 is a sequel to the original. Because the Necronomicon in this continuity can influence events and make history repeat itself, essentially.
I see. No, I'm of the mindset that all the Evil Dead movies take place within some sort of similar shared universe.
Like, it's the continuity is very, very loose in this series, and it's best not to think about it as one straight thing. Because it just gets confusing if you do it that way.
I mean, you could explain it through multiverse theory.
That's true, too. But later in this movie, they mention that the Necronomicon that Danny finds is one of three copies. And if you remember from Army of Darkness, there were three books.
Two of them being fakes.
At least in that universe.
At least in that universe, right.
Yeah, again, like, this doesn't make sense as one continuous storyline.
There's a lot of Evil Dead timeline fluffing around.
honestly, at this point, like, each Evil Dead movie or series is its own separate continuity.
Kind of, like, yeah.
It's easier if you think about it that way.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, I mean, you could think of the first two movies as, like, the same events.
Well, I mean, true, but But in the second movie, it was just him and Linda who went up to the cabin, whereas in the first one, it was him, Linda, Cheryl, Scotty, and I forget the name of Scotty's girlfriend.
Yes, I forgot too.
that's not good if I can't.
Do you know if any fans have ever edited together, random side tangent, do you know of any fans who have edited together the first two movies but cut out the I would say the recap in the beginning of two?
I've seen, but I'm sure it exists.
Because I think that would be a cool project for someone to do, because technically they said that's a very valid way of explaining it, and it would make the sense have the film have more like a streamlined continuity.
The series would have a more streamlined continuity if New Line Cinema had just let them reuse footage from the first one in the recap segment for the second one, but
it is what it is.
Done is done.
Plus, it being kind of weird has made the series have constant different timelines, which could explain multiverse stuff, which, you know, considering all the directions the Ash vs. Evil Dead TV show went, that doesn't seem out of the realm of the possibility of what you're saying. That there's multiple Necronomicons, and multiple universe is.
And, before we move on, I think that's true even within Ash vs. Evil Dead, because when the third season starts, Linda B is nowhere to be found.
Right.
Like, they don't even, I don't even think they mention her the third season.
I can't remember.
I don't think they did. I know we didn't see her.
No.
No, but I can't remember if they like gave her like a passing mention in that season.
It's been a while. I watched it. I watched it I watched it when it was on TV, so I have completely forgotten.
I would say watch it on Netflix, but they just took it off Netflix.
I've got the Blu-ray collection of it.
Go and rewatch that if you can.
It's cheap now. You can get the Blu-ray collection for pretty cheap.
Well, I will keep that in mind.
Yeah, anyway, totally worth it.
Anyway, where were we?
Were in the middle of Evil Dead Rise.
Okay, so she just gets to the apartment. She shoots the shit with her nieces and nephew. By the way, the nephew is trans.
Yes.
Yes. I just thought I'd mention that because that's cool.
Yes, trans person in this movie.
Yeah, she shoots the shit with her nieces and nephew, and she finds out that the dad left them. And she didn't know that before, which makes it really awkward because like she got the dad a present and said, "Oh, I think your dad's really going to like this." And then they just like look around really awkwardly, and she's like, "What?" And then we cut to it being explained to her that the dad left.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really awkward. And Ellie's just like, Danny, go get my car and get pizza with your sisters.
Oh, yeah, that was awkward.
Yeah, get the fuck out of here. I need to talk to your aunt.
Now, who's the dad?
That is the question, isn't it? We do not see this dad throughout the film. Mm. But later, she does use, Deadite Ellie does use the dad as a prop to try to get Cassie to open the door.
Yes.
Yeah, she's like, "Oh, look, your dad's right down the hallway, and we're about to get back together, and we can all be one big happy family if you just let me in." Which is another way of this being super, super cruel.
Oh, yeah. Any way to mess with your mind, they will take great pleasure in doing that. Even if it doesn't mean killing you immediately, you know.
They like to play with their food.
Yes.
Okay, so yeah, Beth finds out about the divorce. The kids get back with the pizza, and then bam, earthquake. which is the inciting incident of them fighting, finding.
It's set in L.A., isn't it?
Comic-Con. Huh?
It's set in L.A., isn't it?
Yes, it was in the L.A. area, yes.
Okay, I forgot.
even though this movie is an Australian production.
L.A., Australia, what's the difference?
I mean, there's a big difference, but... Okay.
Wait, really?
So, yeah. You didn't know this?
No, I just thought... I thought it was exactly the same. Because I live near L.A. and I see kangaroos all the time.
Little Easter egg with regards to the pizza, because if you look on the pizza box, it says, Henrietta's Pizza, come get some.
Yes, I saw that.
That was a fun little Easter egg.
Yes.
Anyway, yes. There was an earthquake.
If Evil Dead fans, Henrietta Novi is the wife of what's his name? What's his first name? Novi?
I don't know. I just know him as Professor Novi.
Professor Novi's wife, Henrietta, who was killed or died, or got possessed, died and was buried in the basement floor, and so comes back
to the fruit cellar.
Or the fruit cellar, and memorably comes back in Evil Dead 2. And Ash was the Evil Dead.
And Raimi played her both times.
Oh, I didn't know it was the second time, too. That's cool.
Well, at least when in Ash vs. Evil Dead Season 2, when she becomes a Deadeye, it's Ted Raimi again.
Oh, okay. I actually didn't know that. That's pretty cool.
anyway, yes. So there's an earthquake in the parking garage. Danny finds a crevice in the earthquake. He goes down to investigate, and there's a bank vault there, which, by the way, it's worth mentioning that this apartment complex used to be a bank, and that's why there's a bank vault there. So
yes.
Anyway, he finds the Necronomicon in there, and it's surrounded by all these this Christian paraphernalia,
mm-hmm.
You know, crucifixes, all that jazz.
Yeah, you definitely want to touch the thing that's surrounded by all the crucifixes, by the way.
Well,
very smart decision.
Well, I've always had this idea that the Necronomicon has this ability to compel whoever finds it to read from it, or at least touch it, or something.
No, I think that would actually make a lot of sense.
Explain the complete stupidity of some of these characters to do that.
You know,
but.
I make fun, but even if it wasn't some sort of mystical thing that draws people to read it, I mean, most people have a sense of curiosity, especially about a weird book.
Yes.
Like, they'd be like, what the hell is this? So yeah. It doesn't seem to, you know.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, my theory makes the most sense with regards to Evil Dead 2013, because there are multiple warnings in that book saying, leave this book alone. And the guy who's supposed to be the teacher reads from it.
Yeah.
So hence my theory that it has some power over people to compel them to read from it.
I totally vibe with that. Yeah.
Anyway, so yes, he finds the book, he brings it back to the apartment. He doesn't read from it, but some of the things he also takes with him are some phonograph records that were with the book. And
I don't think he could read from it.
No,
right?
he couldn't, because I actually don't think there's words in this one, or at least not many words, anyway.
I feel like a lot of Necronomicons don't have, like, a lot of much to say in terms of, like, wording on the pages as opposed to the drawings. But I do think they're there, but they're just kind of, like, drawn in little tiny margins around the pictures. You know?
Yes. And since Danny is an aspiring DJ, he just happens to have a record player with him, so he's able to play these phonograph records. And it is a priest... on the phonograph records, it's a priest that has found this copy of the Book of the Dead and is trying to convince his fellow priests that they should read from it to, quote,
save humanity, which I don't even know how that's supposed to work, but whatever. But in the background, you can hear Bruce Campbell
shouting, it's called the Book of the Dead for a reason.
Yes, that was him. And Lee Cronin himself has confirmed, or at least he likes to think, that this is Ash.
Yeah, Ash stuck in another time thing.
Yeah, so I guess in this continuity, he got hurled back to 1923.
You know what, I could see that. I could see him trying to escape the future and ending up going back too far.
Yes.
Or so, it's earlier and going back from the Middle Ages, he got stuck there for a little bit.
Indeed.
There's a lot of wiggle room with that, you know.
Yeah, I suppose there is.
When you do timey-wimey stuff. there's a lot of room that you can play with in continuity sort of things.
Fair enough. All right, so yes, one of the phonograph records is the translation of the book, and it starts reading from it.
You again, know, very similar to the
Estrada, yeah, that kind of thing. And then we get the real POV shot of the spirit coming towards the high-rise apartment. And it takes the mother, Ellie, in the elevator, doing the laundry.
Well, very similar to the trees.
Yes, there is another callback to the first Evil Dead, where instead of the trees grappling onto Cheryl, it's what are those called? Like the pulley thingies in the elevator.
It's like electric cables in the elevator.
Yeah, those grab on to Ellie. And I imagine they also do unspeakable things to her.
Which they don't really show.
Yeah, but I imagine it would be way more painful because, you know, it's electric cables.
Both seem pretty bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, both seem bad. Like, I imagine that would be more painful. But anyway, yes, she is now possessed at this point, and she returns to the apartment.
All and fine and dandy.
Yes, totally and normal. She starts cooking some breakfast for dinner.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and she goes on this whole creepy spiel about, like, I had the most wonderful dream that, you know, all I could think about was cutting you open and climbing inside your bodies, which is peak foreshadowing right there.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, but we'll save that. We'll get to that when we get to that. But and then, yes, she makes those eggs. She makes a big mess, and she makes another big mess by throwing up everywhere.
Just, you know, that's me after a night out drinking.
Yeah.
Come back, stumble in, you're trying to make yourself a shitty breakfast when you're hungover and vomiting all over the place. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll tell you, these deadites, they need to take some Tums. But yes, at this point, they think she's dead. And so they try to tell the neighbors, hey, she's dead. Do you think you can help us with her body? And it turns out there's no way out. Because they're on, like, what, the fifth floor, sixth floor? And the elevator's not working, and the stairs are blocked, so they have no way out.
Fun.
And the one apartment that has the fire escape is locked, and they can't get through that one.
Oh, right, yeah. It's an empty apartment.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so yes.
They try and break through.
Yeah, there's not many tenants in this apartment building because they mentioned earlier in the movie that the apartment complex was slated for demolition within a month.
And they're only on, like, I don't know, just a couple on that one floor, right?
Yes. But spoiler alert, all those neighbors die.
Yeah, spoiler alert, all the actually fairly nice people die.
Yeah.
They were all decent neighbors. They seemed like they got along fairly well and knew about each other, you know?
Yeah, but then Deadite Ellie returns to life when they try to put her in the bath to cool her down because they think, oh, she's alive again? What's going on? And then,
well, because she sat up on the bed.
Yes, she did. I kind of skipped over that part.
No, it's cool.
I'm glad you brought up that part because there was a really creepy moment where Beth's cell phone rang and it was Ellie's voice. And she's like, let me out of here. It's so hot. Let me out of here. of course, the implication being that she's in hell.
Yeah, which have they ever really, like, I guess they have a little bit. I'm trying to remember. We've never really seen a manifestation of hell in these films.
Right? We've seen it in
a little bit in Ash vs. Evil Dead. We saw a little bit in Ash vs. Evil Dead, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like when Ash was in that demolition derby and he opened up the trunk of his car, it was pretty hellish inside there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right. Okay.
I need to rewatch that series because it was
so good. I need to do that too. It's totally worth a rewatch.
Well, and plus, they did say that if this movie did well, they'd make more Evil Dead stuff. And one of the Evil Dead stuff they're thinking of doing is reviving Ash vs. Evil Dead as an animated series.
Which I think is probably a good idea. As long as they bring the cast back.
Yeah. And not only that, but they cannot skimp on the animation.
That's what we talked about. It was like we thought that the team that did Castlevania for Netflix
would do a good job. They would be a great choice to do an Evil Dead TV show.
Because if you've seen that show, it's gory as shit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Anyway, where was I? They all know she's possessed by something. And she says the now iconic line, mommy's with the maggots now.
Very comforting message.
Yes. So, here comes Alyssa Sutherland doing a wonderfully creepy, hammy performance as Deadite Ellie, and I am here for it.
Well, it's not an Evil Dead movie if there isn't a little bit of, like, hamming it up as one of the Deadites, you know?
Yes, absolutely. And so they manage to get her out in the hall and lock her out. That's when she exacts her vengeance upon the neighbors.
Including kids.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things she does is a neat little reference to Evil Dead 2, where she bites out one of the guy's eyes and spits it in another guy's mouth.
Which is, and if you remember in Evil Dead 2, they're closing the fruit cellar door, the eye pops out, flies across the room into, I don't remember the character's name's mouth.
I feel like some people would have an issue with how many callbacks there were to previous films, but I didn't mind it. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
I don't think it's an issue. I think people who haven't seen the Evil Dead series before, they're not going to like really get it. They're just going to see like, oh, that's a crazy scene. People who have seen it will get these little moments and it's a nice little reference. They didn't go overboard. I don't think they tried to do it too much, you know.
Like, they didn't do it as, like, nostalgia bait or anything. They're just, like, little callbacks.
They were just, like, setting it in the Evil Dead's, like, it's obvious it was made by a fan, you know?
Oh, and one more thing I didn't mention. Before they got her out in the hall, Deadite Ellie got the tattoo gun that she had, because Ellie's a tattoo artist, and she tries to stick it in Bridget's eye.
Oh, yeah.
Which I almost thought they were going to do that, but Bridget moved her head to the side and it got her cheek. And she's like, let me kiss it better.
I guess they didn't want to do an eye thing.
Well, I mean, they did do an eye thing like 2 minutes later.
Yeah, that's true. I guess they didn't want to do it on any of the main characters.
Or like a needle in the eye kind of thing.
Yeah, like
They almost did a needle in the eye in Evil Dead 2013, but like the shot of him pulling it out was pretty grisly. Like it wasn't in his eye. It was near his eye.
He was lucky because he was wearing glasses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like the shot of him pulling it out will always make me wince.
And it's always a really effective looking effect. Like, it looks legitimate, which is crazy.
Yeah. Okay. So they get her out in the hall, and Bridget, you know, says Danny, like, doesn't mom look like one of the things from that book? This is all your fault. And, you know, they have a little fight. And, you know, I feel bad for him because he really didn't know what he was getting into. But at the same time, it's a creepy ass looking book. you should have left it alone.
But again, you said he was compelled, right? Like, that's
yeah.
the theory.
Yeah. But hold on. What's interesting in that is that in this movie, he actually tries to stop the record from playing, but it wouldn't.
He did try.
Like, I'll give him that. But, nope.
He's also just a kid.
Yeah, he is just a kid, but it was kind of sad to see, you know, his family turn on him like that.
Yeah, he just was curious on the creepy book, that's all.
Yeah, but the thing is, if I see a creepy ass book, well, I'm probably gonna check it out because I like creepy things. But
a detail I liked about it, because I think it was cool and creative, was they gave it teeth.
Yes. And it couldn't open without, blood spilling on it. I thought that was a neat little addition, too.
Yeah, that adds a little bit more creepy depth to that. I bet it's fun being the person to create the Necronomicon in each rendition, you know?
You know, what I like about this movie is that it sticks to the franchise tradition of using mostly, you know, practical effects. There's obviously some CGI, like with the eye being spit into that guy's mouth, but mostly it's practical.
The carnage in the, through the people, the carnage in the hallway.
Yeah. That was such an interesting CGI. Way. Yeah. Yeah. Like, that was such an interesting way of portraying that scene, like through that people. It was such an interesting perspective, and I loved that.
I was wondering if they were going to do an eye thing because, you know, when you're looking, you're so vulnerable when you're looking through that little hole.
Yes.
You know, like, that's my thing. I'm like, are they going to, like, shove a knife through it or something, you know?
Yeah, right. Like, I was fearing, like, is that going to happen with this little kid, Cassie? But thankfully it didn't.
No, they do not. They decide not to kill the little kid.
You know, yourmoviesucks.org actually got pretty mad about that. that they didn't have the balls to kill this kid.
Fuck off.
Like his videos, but like, I don't know why he's getting mad about that.
Because it's something to get mad about.
I mean, I guess some people just want things to get mad about, I suppose.
I never get the people who get mad when, like, the ending of a horror movie isn't some, like, extremely dour event. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. There's, like, certain types of people that when they want horror, they want something where, like, bad things happen and it ends bad for everyone. And no one survives. And to me, that can get kind of boring.
Yes.
Right, I think it's much more interesting to have certain characters survive. Especially characters that are in the context of the film, a semblance of the innocence and a reflection of her potential motherhood.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, okay, there's so a now... reason why she survives. You know, there's a reason.
So now, Deadeye Ellie is out in the hall. Bridget is trying to clean up her wound, and Beth and Danny are trying to figure out what this book is and why it's doing what it's doing. And then we get to the part I mentioned earlier about
the eating glass from Bridget, who is now possessed.
Not only that part, but that part occurs concurrently with Deadeye Ellie ushering Cassie to the door.
I like that the yes, but I also like the about the Bridget part, how like the wound like kind of goes into that same, like, sort of black veiny thing that reminds me of a lot, I think, in when one of the older Evil Dead movies with Ash's hand. It does something very similar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she starts, you know, vomiting up these, you know, tiny bug thingies. Kind of looks like the symbiote from Spider-Man.
Pretty gross.
Yeah, it looks pretty gnarly. But, yeah, while that's happening, Deadite Ellie got Cassie to open the door, and she's trying to get her. But thankfully that doesn't happen, because Beth and Danny arrive in time to close the door again.
Yes.
And then Ellie utters one of my favorite lines in the movie. Open the door like you open your legs, you stinking gropey slut.
She shouts back that she's not a groupie.
Yeah, I'm not a groupie, you fucking bitch.
I mean,
she's not. Well, she's a guitar technician.
Guitar technician. That is a very different role than groupie.
Yeah. Well, the movie does imply that the father of the baby is perhaps like one of the bandmates.
But that doesn't mean she's a groupie.
No, it doesn't. It does not mean she's a groupie. Stop saying she's a groupie, Deadite.
It's more like it'd be like one of her coworkers.
Yeah.
Right.
Like one of her fellow roadies.
Yeah. Well, even the bandmates are kind of her fellow coworkers.
That's not important anyway.
Not important.
Anyway, where was I? So we're at the point where Bridget gets possessed, and we get to the glass eating part that I mentioned earlier. But then get this gnarly fucking moment with a cheese grater that I'm sure you've all heard of or seen.
The trailer kind of
The trailer showed some of it, but they didn't show like the bloody aspect of it.
Yeah, so rip.
Yeah. Oh my god. I winced so fucking hard. I mean, I feel like the moment was over too soon, but like it was too quick for me, but at the same time it did its job.
Right. It's a harsh moment, but that's why I was saying when watching 2013, well, there was moments where I winced more, and maybe it's because we watched the unrated cut of that movie, but I feel like, I don't know, her ripping her hand out from underneath that car was probably one of the more difficult things to watch. You know, I still think the cheese grater bit is a very clever and, you know, intense little moment of, ugh.
Oh, yeah.
I'd say it's like the thought of it that makes that more worse than necessarily what's shown on screen.
And so, yeah, the cheese grater moment happens, and Bridget runs into the room with Cassie and Danny. And Cassie impales Bridget through the mouth with, like, this thing that she made with a sharp stick and a baby doll head.
And oh, yeah, they imply that.
You know what I found odd about it that not a lot of people are talking about? It kind of bears a bit of resemblance to the Kandarian dagger.
You know, you mentioning that, I should have thought of that, but I think that's the point.
Yeah, but I'm sure it was, but surprisingly, I didn't hear a lot of people talking about that. But yes,
I think because it's not like the most obvious, you know.
Yeah. But I guess it's cool that it was subtle enough that a lot of people didn't point it out.
Yeah.
But yeah, she impales her with what was essentially a big Kandarian dagger, which I thought was pretty cool. I'm sure that traumatized that girl for life.
Well, I think everything traumatized her for life.
Yeah, like if everything before that didn't, then, you know, that'll do it. Impaling her sister through the mouth.
Yeah. They're going to need some therapy.
Mm-hmm. If the therapist does not become a deadite, of course.
Deadbite.
Okay, so I looked it up. Apparently that stick was a broken broom handle.
What did she call it?
Stephanie. Yeah, I thought that was clever. Stephanie.
I like that. It was
but, yeah, as I've repeatedly said before, for all intents and purposes, it's a giant Kandarian dagger.
I love that little girl. She's great. They in the little scenes we get with her showing her personality, wonderful.
Yeah, you know, usually child actors aren't that great, but she was pretty good.
She was good. Her personality was great. She was funny. It makes you really like her.
Yeah, like, you'll be a good mom someday, Annie Beth. Oh, yeah? Yeah, you know how to lie to kids. Yeah.
Smart perfect. Kid.
Yeah. Okay, so at this point in the movie, what was it that happens next?
Well, Danny ties up.
Yeah, he ties up Bridget. Said he thought he had to do it, which, you know, later it proved that it didn't work, but at least he tried something. And she, Beth, I mean, she starts to listen to one of the records that Danny found. And on the record, what was most interesting is that these Deadites in this continuity are invulnerable to pretty much anything short of complete dismemberment.
Yes.
Yeah, because, like, you know, fire, which works in Evil Dead 2013, does not work here. You which chop I think off is... all their limbs, that's not going to work. But it has to be Deadites. The priest says, remember, the priest says, all you can do is run.
Well,
so, yeah,
complete that, body.
That elevates the threat.
Yeah. Do you think it would be like what's it called? Dead Alive? With the organs that move freely?
Maybe. Maybe we'll see that in the next movie.
Did you see that movie?
No, I haven't, but I know what you're talking about.
Oh,
but
there's like internal organs from one of them that just like can move.
You know, maybe we'll see that in the next movie, because we know from Ash vs. Evil Dead that they've done that before.
That's true.
Because remember that scene in the morgue, which is probably the most disgusting scene in the entire franchise?
That's probably the most gross scene in the entire franchise.
Oh,
but
like,
in a way, that's
oh,
more
that's so gross.
It's more funny, though.
It is funny, but it's also very disgusting. Like, not up the butt! Not up the butt!
Oh, out of gross. Context, for people who haven't seen that show, but there's a scene in the morgue and it involves every single bodily fluid you can imagine.
Yeah. Well, let's just say that after the scene when Kelly asks what happened, Ash says, do not mention... Kelly says the word asshole in a sentence, and Ash says, do not say the words ass or hole in front of me again. That's all you need to know about that scene. Yeah, that's another thing about Ash vs. Evil Dead. It is funny.
It's funny as shit. It's really funny.
It's very funny. Like, the humor does not feel out of place at all. It's hilarious. I love it.
It fits the tone of what it's going for. It's like, I would say tonally, Ash vs. Evil Dead is my favorite Evil Dead thing, tone-wise. I like the comedy. I think that's really a huge portion of this franchise. But that doesn't diminish the more intense horror projects that they do as well.
Alright. Okay, so yeah, she's listening to the record at this point. We've established that these Deadites are damn near invulnerable, short of like completely dismembering them.
Or you know, something we see earlier in the movie that could be used as a weapon.
Yeah, Stephanie.
Not just Stephanie. There's another thing we see early in the movie.
But we'll get to that when we
we'll
get to that.
When we get to that, yeah.
Okay.
But
so,
yes, Stephanie was also the scissors that we'll get to that too.
We'll get to that too. Okay, so she's listening to the record, and while this is happening, Deadeye Ellie finds a way back into the apartment. That is to say, she made like a mogus and vented.
Yes.
I'll be here all week, folks. And so yeah, she gets back into the apartment through the vents, and she gets in the room where Beth is, and like right when the record says, all you can do is run. She sees Ellie in the reflection in the window and she tries to run, but, Deadeye Ellie, takes her fingernail and presses it on the phone of the record and it starts playing out of her mouth.
Which is a really cool bit.
Yeah, that was a really cool visual. And then we get this really funny bit where Beth stabs her in the neck and Ellie makes this really bored face at her, like, really, bitch, before throwing her out the door. I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
It, like I said, it still shows that, you know, despite the mostly dark tone of this movie, there's still some nice little comedic moments peppered in there.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anyway, what's next? Okay. So yeah, Bridget. At this point, Bridget also comes back, wearing a blanket or a bed sheet or whatever. So it looks like she's a ghost flying in the air, which again was a really neat visual. I like that one.
Yeah.
And she attacks Danny with a knife, stabbing him in the arm. And in the heart.
Yes.
Yes. And she's like,
not before Danny.
Put that book up, Danny.
And but Danny does use cooking oil
to set her on fire, which again it placates her, but it does it spoiler alert, she survives and she'll be back later.
Right. But at least Danny went out kind of like a bit of a hero in that one little moment.
Yeah, because he did succumb to his wounds.
Right, but he did at least fought as valiantly as he could.
Yes. And then it's at this point where Ellie has Beth on the ground and she's like, I will swallow your soul. Like the classic.
Another
the classic Evil Dead line. And then she like, she sniffs her belly and she goes, two souls? Yeah, and then, yeah, she tries to, like, grab the baby out of her womb before Cassie tosses her the scissors that were underneath the couch and Beth stabs her with it.
Yep.
Yes. Yes, 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 yes. Love this freaking movie. So at this point, Beth and Cassie try to make their escape, but all the neighbors are starting to come back to life as deadites, and they all utter another classic Evil Dead line, which I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast. Dead by dawn.
Dead by dawn.
Dead by dawn. Dead by dawn.
It was pretty unsettling hearing all of them. And they're different. How many were chanting?
Yeah, that's another thing about this movie. The sound design is great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
they all sounded very eerie.
Yeah, particularly in that scene and in the scenes with the phonograph record.
Yes.
Anyway,
technically,
okay, so they managed to get the elevator working again. So Beth and Cassie go there. And while that's happening, Deadeye Bridget and Deadeye Danny start digging in the insides of Deadeye Ellie. And we don't know exactly what's happening until the movie cuts to the Necronomicon flipping around the pages.
And I also think we saw that image earlier in the movie.
We did see that image earlier in the movie, but
yeah.
We don't know quite what's happening. Well, most of the audience doesn't until it gets to that page again. Of this multi-limbed abomination. And
which I
that's
think is
when
cool.
You realize, oh shit, this movie's about to get John Carpenter's The Thing on our asses.
I think that inclusion of this type of deadite is amazing. I love it. I love that.
And the franchise actually has done something like this before in the third season of Ash vs. Evil Dead.
Yes.
Where, like, they're... There was one deadite who, like, fuses himself to a human, a la John Carpenter's The Thing, to make a multi-limbed deadite.
That's right. It's like, these deadites have really interesting powers.
Yeah. But, it's... It's mostly CGI looking in that show, but here it's all practical. Well, mostly practical anyway.
I mean, in the show they did use a lot of practical.
Yeah, like, they used a lot of prosthetics and practical effects in that show.
Where they could, but it is a TV show and it had some sort of TV show restrictions, so there is CGI stuff in that too, you know.
Yeah, like the multi-limbed Deadeye I mentioned earlier. And it didn't look great, but I appreciated what they were going for.
I'm sure it looked fine. Everything on that show.
I mean, like, it could have looked worse, but, like, you could tell it was CGI.
Yeah.
But here, however, it looks freaking terrifying. Like, but the thing is that it's mostly in shadows. Like, they keep it mostly in shadows until there's a moment where it gets Cassie into this truck, and then it comes out of the shadows, and it looks all fucking gnarly. My voice is cracking a lot, mostly because I'm excited talking about this movie.
I'm excited, too.
Anyway, but I'm getting ahead of myself. Okay, so, yeah, the multi-limbed abomination is
a thing. While the two of them go in the elevator.
And then the movie decides to get Shining on our asses. Because the elevator starts filling with blood.
And also the movie felt like it wanted to try and rival its other movies by having as much blood as possible.
Yes, because if y'all were not aware, Evil Dead 2013 holds the world record for most fake blood used in a movie.
It's probably that scene.
Yeah, it's the scene with the blood rain that used most of the blood budget. But, yeah, this movie decides to say, hold my beer, and does the blood elevator thing. And it looks great, especially when they get to the bottom and the door.
Oh, because you could tell it was, like, a lot of it was practical. You know, like, just, like, there's an elevator filled with blood.
I've seen behind the scenes footage of them trying it, but with water first.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I can't wait for whenever they release the physical Blu-ray, what they put on the special features and all that.
Yeah, like I've seen bits and pieces of behind the scenes, but I can't wait till the Blu-ray comes out because I want to see the whole thing. Anyway, where was I? Okay, so they get to the bottom floor. They're both covered in blood. They get to the car, and miraculously, the car starts running, but because there was an earthquake earlier, and they forgot about that for some reason, the car gets stuck in one of the crevices.
I didn't think they forgot about the earthquake. I think they were just trying to get the fuck out of there.
Yeah. But, also, kind of flipped their mind, and then, bam, they get stuck.
Yep.
And so, they're trying to
press the button on the what's it called? The gate?
Yes. And they make a break for it, and they almost make it, but then the multi-limbed abomination grabs Cassie and takes her to this, this truck that has a wood chipper attached to it, and that has, surprise, surprise, a chainsaw inside.
Also on the side of the truck, it says Fonda's, which I believe is a Bridget Fonda.
I figured I'd let you have that one since I mentioned the Henrietta's Pizza earlier.
Oh yeah, no, I noticed that too. I was like, oh, that's cool. Yes. Oh, I have another Easter egg I didn't mention earlier. Some of the neighbors, the two of them were like younger guys, and they wanted to hang out. One of them was like, I think even younger, but like it was a teen and like a preteen. But like they were mentioning that they were going to watch a marathon of a certain movie franchise.
Huh. And what pray tell was that movie franchise?
Oh, just a Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yes.
Yes.
These Evil Dead movies love to reference Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah. With continuing the tradition of most famously in Evil Dead 2, Freddy's glove can be seen in the work shed.
Yeah, no. But it all started when, in Evil Dead 1981, there was a Hills Have Eyes poster, I believe.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It was in the fruit cellar in that one.
Yes, and then in the first Nightmare on Elm Street, Nancy is watching The Evil Dead on TV. And then in Evil Dead 2, there's a Freddy glove and blah, 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 blah. But now there's a moment where they're like, hey, we're going to watch all the Freddy movies, even the bad ones. There are no bad ones. I like that. I can't believe I forgot to mention that earlier.
It's okay. We were more focused on the actual carnage of the movie as opposed to the little finer details we missed.
All right. Okay.
And we're the climax of the movie.
Yeah, we're at the point where, Cassie and the Abomination are in the truck, and the Abomination grabs the chainsaw and tries to cut off Cassie's head with it, probably to attach it to itself. Which would be even more messed up.
Well, you know, once you're a multi-limbed, multi-body Abomination creature made up of human parts, you gotta have more parts.
Oh, of course.
That's just standard operating procedure, you know?
Indeed. Alright, but yes, before that could happen, Beth, who, by the way, has one of her neighbor's shotguns, shoots at the Abomination and then utters another classic Evil Dead line. Crystal, you want to tell me what that line was?
Come get some.
Come get some. And then the creature actually hilariously throws the chainsaw at her, and Beth is like, ah, oh shit. And she falls off of the wood chipper and drops the chainsaw and the shotgun. So that badass moment of her saying, come get some, is kind of undercut by her bumbling over.
That's a very Ash thing to do, though.
Yes. She really is the, she's the torch is being passed.
Goofy, clumsy Ash, but can pull it together in the final moments.
Indeed. And that is exactly what's going to happen, because at first, the Abomination switches on the wood chipper and tries to drag Beth through it. But Cassie actually comes through and turns it off before that can happen.
Which is pretty smart of her.
Yes. But then Beth manages to grab the chainsaw and do the Mia from 2013 thing. That is to say, sticking the chainsaw through the entire being.
I mean, you gotta do what you gotta do, right?
Yeah. Peace on this, motherfucker. I will never not love that moment from Evil Dead 2013.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, but it was pretty cool here, but I like that. I like that kind of moment in 2013 better, but it was pretty cool here.
I think the Abomination in this one looks cooler because it's so
weird. Yeah, it looks way gnarlier.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Deadite Danny and Deadite Bridget are pulled through the wood chipper. And so is most of Deadite Ellie until she is just a head. And she utters one last line. I think it went like, you know, you really do look like Mom. You stinking groupie cunt! And then Beth kicks her through the whip tripper. Mm-hmm. Actually, there was a moment before that where Deadeye Ellie says, help me, Bethy Boo, or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's like a fake cry for help.
And then Beth says, only my sister calls me that. Cue chainsaw to the head. But yes, she kicks the head through the wood chipper, and just like that, the main carnage is over.
Yep.
Yeah, but what's really sad is that the last shot of this scene is inside the family car and of the keychain, where it's just a picture of the family having fun. Oof, that was a major sting. That hurt.
Yeah, that entire family went bye-bye, except for Cassie.
Except for Beth and Cassie.
Hey,
And then we arrive at the final scene, which, like I said earlier, connects to the opening scene where the cousin from earlier is revealed to be a tenant in the building.
On another floor.
Yes, on another floor.
Which,
that allowed her to access the stairs. And
The floor below, or?
I think it was a floor below.
Okay.
A couple floors below, actually.
I don't remember, but yeah, probably.
But yeah, she took the stairs, and she couldn't take the elevator because it's probably full of blood.
It reminds me of the joke from the Simpsons parody of The Shining, where like, did you ever see that one?
I actually don't think I did.
Oh, okay. There's a really good bit where Mr. Burns is showing the Simpsons family the hotel. Basically, they're going to stay there to watch it, kind of like in The Shining.
Hotel.
The Overlook Hotel, and like, they press a button, the elevator comes down, and then all the blood comes out of it, and then Mr. Burns goes, huh, that's odd. The blood usually stops off on the second floor.
I'll need to check that out.
No, you should see it. It's one of the earlier seasons. It's great. I think it's
by the way, minor tangent, but have you seen Dr. Sleep?
Yes, I loved it.
Oh my god, I love Dr. Sleep.
Well, I'm a Mike Flanagan fan, so yeah,
I've seen
everything.
Mike Flanagan's great.
Yeah.
I did find the moment where they revisit the Overlook Hotel to be kind of too referencey to The Shining, but otherwise it's a great movie.
I didn't mind it. I thought it was cool.
I mean, like,
I
didn't mind it either, but
full circle thing.
To me, it's definitely the weakest part of the movie.
I can see what you're saying.
Yeah, but it didn't bother me too much. It just was the weakest part of the movie. But anyway, back to this movie. Okay, but we're right at the end anyway. So, yes, the cousin goes downstairs to her car when suddenly, Le Spirits!
Come and give her a group hug.
Yeah, and yeah, it kind of mimics the ending shot of the first Evil Dead where the spirit goes up to her and she screams like, ah! And then the movie's over.
Yep. I can't believe we recapped the entire movie.
Yeah, we did recap the entire movie, but at the same time, we did our commentary on it.
Yes.
Which is what I wanted to do the whole time.
You know what we should do one of these days?
What?
Do a Gals of Geekdom watch through of an Evil Dead film and work it as an actual commentary track that people can play.
Oh, do you want to do like a riff track kind of thing?
We could do riff tracks, but it would just be more like our thoughts throughout said movie.
Nice.
Rather than
we could totally do that.
Yeah, because we
have to figure out a way. We just have to figure out a way to do it.
Well, that could be fun. I feel like people would enjoy that if they want to hear our stupid comments throughout.
So yes, in conclusion, the Evil Dead have rose, have risen.
They have a risk.
Before we end the podcast, though, I do want to get into what Lee Cronin has said his ideas for sequels would be. Because there are several directions this franchise could go from here.
Yeah, it can go anywhere.
So let's see. He says he has four places where it could go. First is the story behind the Book of the Dead. We have history in this film, and that's presented through the vinyl. So there's a story to be told there. It's not by accident. Which means if he goes that route, then we could see Ash again.
You know, I hope so.
Yeah, because remember, Bruce Campbell did say he's starting to miss the character, so ...
whatever that means. I actually wouldn't mind if he just voices the character, you know, but...
Yes. Okay, second possible sequel route. Beth takes her chainsaw on the road. Somebody that survives picks up the chainsaw at the end and where they might go. I guess that would be a more natural direction for the franchise to go from here, because... I mean, she did survive the onslaught, and the Book of the Dead wasn't exactly stopped because there are still spirits out there, and there are still deadites out there.
I mean, and there's plenty of corpses in the building, and
yes,
the book is still in the building with the records. They didn't do anything to stop any of that.
Those deadite neighbors weren't exactly killed.
No.
So, what my theory is if they do decide to go that route, the building is slated for demolition, so maybe the demolition crew arrives and the deadite curse spreads, and then it spreads all throughout the city. That could be
an entire city of LA that's overrun with deadites.
Yeah, that could be intense.
That's kind of what happens in the Evil Dead Fistful of Boomstick game. It's an entire town.
Oh, well, maybe they could do something like that.
Yeah, it's like adapted basically, it's like kind of open world, but it's since it's PS2, earlier PS2 era, it's kind of like a limited open world, you know? And there's different rooms that buildings you have to go to. And I think one of the buildings that you have to stop the deadites from going to is the television, the local television station, because they want to read it on air.
Right. I want to watch a playthrough of that game, Evil Dead Fistful of Boomstick.
So Fistful of Boomstick is fun. I would say it's not as like clear-cut a story, you know, as... I would recommend if you want it, like a story that feels like a story within the Evil Dead universe, Regeneration, Evil Dead Regeneration.
Right. But
I still think you should look at both because I played both of them and they were both fun. Even though I liked Regeneration more.
Right. All right. The third idea for the sequel is kind of what I mentioned earlier. The apartment building. There's also the aftermath in this building and who encounters that. And I've often thought what happens when the cleanup crew shows up, i.e., yeah, the demolition crew that'll wreck the building. So, yeah, that's kind of goes into what I mentioned before. And then the final idea is back to the woods. Because of the opening and the closing, there's that continuation of how this evil has a gait. That brings us back into that forest context, which excites me because I love that I broke the mold. But wouldn't it be fun now if I went back to the cabin in the woods? It could be a cool journey. I don't like the idea of going back to the cabin in the woods because, like, we've kind of explored that territory far too much for this franchise. I want to see them go in different directions. So I hope he doesn't go that route for the sequel. All the other routes sound interesting, though.
Yeah, I don't think I would be upset if they went back as long as they made a good movie, but I feel like this is a good way to explore some different territories, you know, some different things. I guess we can just go over our final thoughts. This movie rocked.
Oh, yeah, big time. If you want to know my ranking of the franchise, I think I've posted it on Twitter. It goes thus, from best to worst. Evil Dead 2. All three seasons of Ash vs. Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2013, Evil Dead Rise, Evil Dead 1981, and Army of Darkness.
Then I guess mine would be, I didn't put it on my list because I just did the movies, but I did Evil Dead 2 as one, number two would be Army of Darkness, three is Evil Dead Rise, four is the original Evil Dead, and 5 is Evil Dead 2013. Not to say that any of those, even the weakest ones on those, are very, very, very good.
Yes. Yeah, with the, like Jazzy said, like, there's a caveat that all of them are good.
They're all at least above 4 stars.
Yes.
So, like, probably most of them I would put, like, 4.5. You know? Yeah, with Evil Dead 2 at, like, a 5.
Yeah, you know? Some people don't like that I ranked Army of Darkness dead last. I love Army of Darkness. Like, I gave it an 8 out of 10. It's just, it got a little too goofy for me. Like, it leaned too much into the goofiness. And there's supposed to be, like, a fine line between the horror and the comedy. At least to me, anyway. But I do like that they went into this direction of this being, like, a fun fantasy adventure. I do really like that movie.
I have it ranked so high because it was the first one I saw.
I feel like it's the first one that a lot of people saw, Jazzy included.
I think because they aired it on TV. I mentioned it was on the Sci-Fi Channel a lot.
Yes.
And it's there's not much you have to do to edit that movie to make it TV appropriate, you know?
Well, here's the thing. Raimi actually made it as tame as he did because he wanted to get a PG-13 rating. But the MPAA slapped him with an R anyway.
I think it's because of, a little bit too much blood, right?
Well, I mean, if they want to edit it for TV, they could remove the geyser of blood, but not much else.
Yeah. And some of the cursing.
Yeah. Because there is cursing in this movie. But not
a lot.
They don't have to remove too much to make it appropriate for TV.
I mean, the Shout Factory Blu-ray I own of it does have the TV version included.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's got four different cuts of the movie on the Shout Factory release.
Nice.
It's totally worth seeing for that. The TV version's interesting because they've got alternate scenes. It's different.
Alright.
So, but, when I watch the movie, I generally lean toward the theatrical cut because I love the ending.
Yes.
But I think the director's cut's also good. I think it's good, but I think the theatrical ending fits the tone of the movie a little bit better. You know?
All right. I think that's it for me.
Yeah, I think we reached a good point on this Evil Dead centered podcast. If you made it all the way through and you haven't seen Evil Dead Rise, I ask you, why did you listen to us first? The second question the second thing I'm going to tell you is go see it.
Yeah. If you listen to this whole damn thing and you just spoiled it for yourself if you haven't seen it before and you listen to this whole damn thing.
But it's better when you see it in context.
Absolutely.
So, all right. Did you want to add anything else?
No, I just want to drop my links. You can find me at Ashy Groovy on Twitter and Ashy Slashy on Letterboxd. Crystal.
You can.
I called you Jazzy by accident.
Do I sound like Jazzy?
No, I just talked to her a lot. I just talked to her a lot.
No, it's fair.
It's just a slip of the tongue.
I see what it is. No, it's just. It's fine. Hi, I'm Crystal Williams. You can find my Twitter at Crystal W. Rux. You can also when you're on my Twitter in the bio, I have a link to my Linktree. And on my Linktree, you can go to all the different locations, including Medium, where I write articles on occasion. And with that being said, thank you for listening to another episode of the Gals at Geekdom podcast. We should be back next time with some of our other gals. Hopefully you're there. We're going to have a blast.
All right. Can't wait.
And we will see you in the next episode. Goodbye.
Bye, everybody.
Dead, bye. Bye, die.
Bye, 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 bye.